Oh, Gertie, wait. Can't you wait another month, even another week? I've waited already, Mrs. Melville, as long as I can. I can't keep working for nothing. I ain't a nigger, which back then, in the mouths of the working class, meant slaves, or a filthy mick with no home of his own, sleeping in alleys under good folks' steps, searching through the midden after moondown. I've told you already, I won't be here on Tuesday. It's the best I can do. I have a job at Mrs. Pete Petrie's up the hill, right behind the Capitol. This is a blessed country, Mrs. Melville. Truly blessed, remember that. Where I come from, when the creditors come around, not only do they take your money and your goods, they strip your children's clothes right off them, even when the snow is falling. Your own, too, if they can look, if they look as if they might get something for them from the Jews, before they turn you into the street. That was what it was like where I come from. Here, they leave you at least what you're wearing, and you have another week after that, after they go to find a place. And I mean good people like yourself and Mr. Melville and his sainted memory. The first night without Gertie, Mother stewed a chicken. At the dining table, after the serving bowl went round, and we ladled stew into our own soup plates, or, me and Gansvoort and Helen, into the plates of the younger ones, Gansvoort bent his head, as did Mother and the others, and my oldest brother said blessing. We picked up our spoons and, one after the other, took our first mouthful. Because I was hungry, I took three quickly in a row. Helen sat, her spoon halfway to her face. On it was a gray square of onion, and upright against some chicken that might have been a bit of wood hatcheted from a fire log, a round of carrot leaned like a sun setting in gray gravy. Slowly was how Helen always ate as she watched. Then, spoons still in our mouths, one after the other, we uttered ugly cries and made wretched faces. Our spoons dropped, clinking to our bowls. My eyes grew teary, not because I was crying, but because of the intensity of the bitterness that filled not just my mouth, but my whole head, then cascaded through my chest and belly. Sitting forward sharply, I gagged to keep from throwing up, and spat my own mouthful back in the plate. At her own place, Mother put her hands over her mouth and started to shake. Oh, Lord, what? Her speech was slurry, coming through a mouthful of food. Good Lord, I must be trying to poison us all. She spat stew into her palm. The gallbladder. It must have. She spoke more clearly, then turned to look around the table. Timmy, don't do that. Wait. She shot at my little brother, who spat repeatedly into his bowl. He'd started to cry. No, please don't. She moved her hands about, with a mess in the upturned claw of one, as if offering it to one of us or another. I'm so sorry. Please, wait, wait. Eventually, I would think waiting was her solution for all the ills of the world. What was I thinking? I mean, Gertie always did the cleaning of the birds. She brought her hand back to her chin and spat into it once more, as did Gansvoort and Catherine and Nancy. Mother turned her hand up over her own soup plate to let the muck splat back into her serving. As if she'd remembered something, she snatched up a napkin and began to wipe at her palm, her fingers. As she wiped, she began to make a sound, soft and irregular, that I thought was giggling. So that I tried to smile, even through my nausea, at what seemed a very strange joke, till I saw first, a second, then a third tear crossed down over her cheekbone. I should have looked. She gripped her napkin, shook her head. I thought Mr. Harling, had taken the bladder out already. I did, since the bird was cut open. Gertie always did the cleaning of the fowl, she repeated, insisted, even when I chose the vegetables to go in. Imploringly, she looked around. Usually he removes it, doesn't he? Doesn't he? Oh, and I could tell that something was falling apart. If we only had Gertie. I wondered if this meant I should go for our old housekeeper and cook on her stolid door, or her stolid Hildy. With my legs beneath the tablecloth, I realized I didn't know Gertie's last name, which would make finding her at the south end of Larch a problem. I don't think Mother knew it either. But I wasn't thinking. I should have tasted it. She drew herself up. Taste the dinner and ruin your figure. That's the rule for the lady of the house, so you don't turn into a house yourself. That's why you have a cook, my aunt always said, to get fat in your place. But I was in such a hurry and so tired. She blinked at us all. What will we eat now? All the vegetables I put in with it in the Dutch oven, they're ruined. It must have been because you were stirring it with the iron spoon and not the wooden one Gertie uses. Helen had put her spoon down and was the one of us who hadn't put hers in her mouth. I'm sure that's why it broke. It was just an accident. Back then, Helen knew as little of cooking as Mother. My mother's childhood trips to the New England farms of the rural side of her wealthy family had taught her a good deal about some things, but cooking was not one. Regularly I heard her say she hated it, simply had no feel for it. Today I know that the gallbladder left in and overlooked, whether it bursts or not, will render inedible any chicken or goose or duck or pigeon. Then I did not, though I had taken the first traumatic step toward learning. The eldest of us, Helen, leaned over from her place and touched Mother's wrist with her agate bracelet just below her sleeve. It's all right now. It wasn't your fault, Mother. It's all right. At Helen's direction, we went into the kitchen, got dippers of water from the pail in the cabinet, and rinsed our mouths out. I stood on the kitchen steps after Nancy and Catherine and spit out the back door into the evening. That night, in the dining room, we had milk and bread and raspberry jam. The stew still had to be thrown out. Actually, I felt bad for the poor Irish folk I'd been told came through the backyards at 2 or 3 in the morning, looking in the wicker refuse hampers we set outside for a bite of one or another discarded meal. I'd never seen them, though, nor would I have spoken of them any more than I would have spoken to them. Thank you.